First, it's the Week in Washington, where we learn more about some of the top stories in national politics. The Biden administration and the Democratic-controlled Congress are responding to a pair of deadly mass shootings and an ongoing situation with immigrant overcrowding at the southern border. Just today, President Biden announced that he's tapping Vice President Harris to be the point person for both addressing the immediate flow of migrants from other countries, as well as developing a strategy around longer-term root causes of this migration. And Biden and Democrats are trying to move forward with major policy goals, including infrastructure upgrades and other campaign promises around climate change and racial equity. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you see as some of the biggest infrastructure challenges the country is currently facing? What do you think the federal government can and or should do to help? And a big point of contention, how to pay for it all. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Andy Duren covers Congress and American politics for The Wall Street Journal. Andy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with responses to the shootings now in two major American cities. What are we hearing from President Biden and what he's looking for from Congress in response?
So President Biden has called on Congress this week to pass two things. One is a universal background checks along the lines of legislation that has previously passed in the House, and then also to ban assault weapons, which was something that were banned for a while. Actually, when he was in the Senate, President Biden helped put that together in 1994, and then that ban actually expired after 10 years. But it's important to keep in mind that, you know, tragically, you know, with the, you know, the frequency of these shootings, Congress often, you know, turns to the gun issue, the gun control issue after, you know, these mass shootings or, a series of these mass shootings. And they have a conversation about some of these same topics, including background checks and possibly an assault weapon ban or, you know, implementing federal red flag laws and things like that. And so far in recent years, you know, that has not gone anywhere, has not produced legislation.
And we heard from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer yesterday, who announced he's in the process of bringing forward a couple bills on the Senate floor. One of them related to crimes against Asian American and Pacific Islanders. Another related to domestic terrorism. Again, these are things that have passed the House. Can you tell us about these bills and their chances in the Senate? Sounds like,
yeah,
there you are.
Sorry if I'm having connection issues.
Well, you're back. Go for it.
Sorry. So those, I think a lot of legislation coming from the House will have a difficult road in the Senate, both for two reasons. I mean, one is in some cases there are Democrats who don't support this legislation or who are skeptical of this legislation or who share some of the goals of the legislation, but not all of it. And then another is, the absence of Republican support or widespread Republican support for these measures. Some of the events of the last few weeks have added a lot of fresh energy to a conversation around getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate, which is basically the requirement that a piece of legislation has 60 votes in support of it to be able to move through the process, or that, you know, you can block a piece of legislation with 41 votes. So in a 50-50 Senate, that obviously means that Republicans still hold a lot of power. And so there has been this, you know, renewed conversation among Democrats in the Senate about whether they should get rid of that requirement and, you know, make it so that legislation like gun control and some of these other measures can advance just with 50 votes.
We are talking about some of the top stories in national politics this week. Andy Duren is with us from The Wall Street Journal. You can join in at 800-642-1234. One of the next big issues that our guest has been reporting on involves infrastructure spending, calls from the Biden administration for a big investment over the next 10 years or so. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on that idea. Andy, I think if I have this right, there's not a formal plan at this point from the Biden administration. What kind of things do we know, though, that they're looking at?
So there's not a formal public plan, but there are some preliminary plans being prepared at the White House right now. Our understanding is that aides are bringing some proposals to the president this week, and that he and his top advisors will be kind of finalizing them before rolling them out to, you know, folks on Capitol Hill and possibly the public. And so the big things we know about those plans is, first of all, it's going to be roughly $3 trillion or more of new federal spending, and it's going to be split into kind of two broad buckets. The first bucket is going to be focused on infrastructure spending. So obviously things like, you know, bridges and roads and, you know, sewage systems, water distribution systems, dams and things like that. But then also, you know, clean energy investments in the electricity grid and, you know, just the totality of different infrastructure needs that, you know, that are out there. So that will be the first package. And then the second package will be focused on kind of education measures and anti-poverty measures. So there are things like universal pre-K and tuition-free community college, but then also expanding or making permanent a few, you know, social welfare programs, some of which are quite recent. You know, one of the big ones is, you know, expanding or extending, you know, a child tax credit, a new child tax credit that Democrats recently passed into law. So that's kind of the big, you know, umbrella that is out there right now. It's still preliminary. And of course, it still has to go to lawmakers on Capitol Hill who, you know, obviously will have a lot of input and a lot of opinions about what this package or packages should look like. But I do think in the coming days and the coming weeks, we'll start to see quite a bit more information about the specifics of the plan and what we might see actually become law.
And that $3 trillion-ish number, I mean, you look at that stacked up against that $1.9 trillion recovery package. That was already a lot of money. But this $3 trillion, as I understand it, would be spread over, what, 10 years or so? Still a lot of money, but not this one big lump sum that we saw, like, in the emergency relief.
Right, yeah. I think it would be, especially for things like infrastructure projects, it would kind of go out the door over time. And for some measures, it would be you know, extending a program that maybe costs, you know, for example, $90 billion a year for 10 years. So that would be, you know, for a total of $900 billion for the price tag. Another important part of this and another reason that it will differ from the $1.9 trillion plan is there will be a much more intense discussion about raising taxes as part of this effort or including other kind of revenue raising or cost saving measures as part of this plan. So some of the big things under consideration right now at the White House are things that, you know, Joe Biden included, you know, as part of his campaign proposals, things like raising the corporate tax rate or raising, the capital gains tax rate for high earners or raising the top income, you know, the top marginal tax rate for, income tax rate for top earners and things like that. And so it's unlikely that, you know, those measures, even if, you know, there were, you know, several of these things that Biden campaigned on, it still might not be enough to cover the full cost of the package. But I think we will see possibly some pretty substantial kind of tax increases, especially for corporations and, you know, high income individuals and families as part of the bill.
And now infrastructure is something that it seems like for years we've heard, oh, that's a topic that Obama could work with Republicans on or Trump could work with Democrats on. And now maybe Biden could work with Republicans on. What kind of prospects are there for bipartisan agreement, even on just, you know, discrete parts of a proposal like this from the Biden administration?
I think that's a really open and important question right now at this stage in the discussions. I mean, as you said, this we've heard this or we've seen this movie before where, you know, Democrats say that they won't Democrats on an infrastructure plan. And they both say that infrastructure has always been something that Congress has been able to do on a bipartisan basis. And yet, you know, as you mentioned, they haven't been able to do it, at least in recent years. So I think we will see a more concerted effort or a more concerted attempt to put together something along bipartisan lines, especially to start with. You know, during the relief plan just a few months ago, there was a very brief beginning phase where Democrats and Republicans were courting each other before it became clear that Democrats were going to, you know, try to move forward on their own. And so I think we will see in the coming weeks and months, you know, Republicans and Democrats try to look at where they could come together specifically on, you know, really like rebuilding and repairing infrastructure and, you know, roads and bridges and rail lines and things of that nature. I think what will really complicate that or make things much more difficult is this question of tax increases. There is kind of a tricky situation where you have Republicans who are opposed to or worried about, a lot of new, deficit financed spending and adding to the nation's debt. But then at the same time, Republicans are opposed to some of the tax increases that Democrats propose. And then Democrats are opposed to the tax increases that Republicans propose. And so I think if there is going to be a serious effort to try and pay for this, I think, maybe Democrats and Republicans can, agree that we should have, a better functioning rail system in the United States, but they probably, it's less likely or might be more difficult for them to agree on, raising the corporate tax rate to do that, or, raising the gas tax to do that, or, some combination of the two or whatever. And so, it will be a really interesting few weeks here as the Biden White House does put out, a more specific outline and details of.
We're talking to Andy Duren, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Democrats and Republicans work together on infrastructure spending? Is there something you'd like them to focus on? Nuts and bolts, cars and rails, maybe climate change? 800-642-1234. Also coming up, we'll look at the situation on the U.S. southern border, the response from the Biden administration. What do you want to see from the Biden administration on border issues? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Duren, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on infrastructure spending. If you want to see some of it, lots of it, what you'd like to see maybe here in Wisconsin done with that kind of money, 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's bring on a caller now. Jim is with us in Hartford. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think he should be spending any money. The last time when he was vice president to Obama, they did a big infrastructure package, and the money really was misappropriated. It didn't really do anything. It didn't really go anywhere. How do we trust that the money that they're going to generate is going to go for the things they say? And how effective really is it going to be? Is it worth that much debt? I just don't see it panning out like they think.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Jim, referring back to the post-Great Recession recovery spending. Andy, a lot of that did go into highways. There was criticism, though, into some of what it went into. I don't know. How do people in Washington talk about how to measure the effectiveness of this kind of spending?
I do think that will be, important challenge for the Biden administration is how they, do go about implementing all of this. But I do think that there is a difference in how folks are thinking about or approaching this infrastructure package in a way than they might have with previous infrastructure spending. And that's that, the Biden administration really sees this infrastructure plan as being, basically synonymous with their agenda on climate change. And so there will be, I think, a big way of in terms of how this will be described and talked about and what a lot of the measures will be aimed at energy efficiency and investing in clean energy resources and, updating our infrastructure to be more, the nation's infrastructure to be more resilient to climate change and things of that nature. In terms of monitoring and controlling how it all gets spent, I think there might be, possibly depending on what the economy looks like, as the bill comes together and later this year, there could also be a change in emphasis in terms of, what kind of time scale the money would be geared towards. In some cases, I think for previous bills, there's been an emphasis on kind of shovel ready projects and things where you can get the money out the door quickly and into the economy. But and that can sometimes create problems in terms of implementation or complications in terms of implementation. But I think if you know, some of the pressure is off in terms of the state of the economy, and there is this kind of longer term goal with climate change that they might have a different approach and might, you know, could be more deliberate and possibly use the money more wisely.
Thanks a lot for that call. Let's turn now, Andy, to another big issue facing the Biden administration, a big jump in the number of people crossing the Mexico-U.S. border, especially children, raising concerns about space to house them while their asylum process or asylum applications are being processed. What kind of things are we hearing from the Biden administration on that this week?
So obviously you saw today that Vice President Harris has been kind of tapped to take the lead on a few of these things. And there were, you know, officials, U.S. officials traveling in Mexico and the Northern Triangle countries later this week to meet with officials there about steps that can be taken in those countries to try and, you know, in the first place, you know, stop folks from leaving, and then also working with Mexico to try and, I guess, you know, regulate how people are coming to the United States. But I do think it is going to, you know, remain a huge challenge. I mean, the reasons that, you know, people do leave, you know, try and enter the United States often is a product of kind of systemic problems in their home countries. And so obviously that's, those aren't things you can necessarily change or address in a week. In terms of the folks who are, or the folks who are, coming into the United States, often the unaccompanied minors who are being housed in kind of U.S. facilities. I know the, you know, last week the administration was trying to take steps to, you know, increase the amount of shelter space, and then also removing some kind of distancing requirements that had put in place because of COVID to, you know, increase the capacity of some of the shelters. But I do think that, you know, both with obviously the number of people who are trying to, you know, come into the United States, and then with, you know, the extent to which Republicans really do see this as a political opportunity for them to, you know, attack the administration and draw what they see as a contrast between Republican immigration policies and Democratic immigration policies. I think this will continue to be, you know, a challenge for the administration.
Yeah, staying with the politics of it, I mean, you've got Republicans criticizing the Biden administration, saying they're, that the Biden's changes in policy have led to this increase in numbers. You've got people on the left saying, hey, wait, what about the humane treatment of these kids? We don't think you're doing enough. The press, meanwhile, saying it, rightly that they are being barred from seeing some of these facilities. How big an issue, a political problem, is this for the Biden administration?
I think time will tell how big of an issue it will be. I mean, I think to your point, Republicans, again, they want to try and blame the Biden administration's policies as driving this. That, I mean, in their view, you know, tougher rhetoric on immigration and basically trying to discourage people from coming to the United States by saying they won't be able to live here or come in would, you know, help solve this problem. I think it will really depend, you know, how big of a problem this remains will one depend on, you know, just how many more people keep coming to the United States, and, you know, how well the Biden administration is able to kind of adapt to, you know, house the unaccompanied minors and pair them with, you know, foster or, you know, pair them with sponsors in the United States. But then also, I think will also depend on basically on what other events kind of pop up. You know, I think if we do start to see the administration put out a plan that includes, you know, a major hike in the corporate tax rate and, you know, an increase on the top marginal income tax rate for high earners and things like that, I think you could also start to see Republicans focus a little bit more on, you know, the proposed tax increases as something they see as a vulnerability, in addition to, you know, the situation at the border. So kind of where the political wind shift is always a little unpredictable. But in general, immigration is an issue that Republicans see as, you know, favorable to them, or one where they are kind of more popular than Democrats.
Talking to Andy Duren from the Wall Street Journal about some of the top stories in national politics. Martha in Menominee is with us, has an issue to bring up. Martha, hi.
Yeah, hey, Rob, thanks for doing this. You put out a call to the listeners to find out what the priorities for the Democrats in Wisconsin should be. And my suggestion is to put all their effort into defeating Ron Johnson should he choose to run. You know, he has said he's not made up his mind yet.
Martha, thanks a lot for the call. Andy, just in our last minute and a half or so, everything we've talked about is happening with the backdrop of a big midterm election. It seems like a long way away. And people focused on seats like this one currently held by Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. How is that affecting what we're seeing in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, I think Senator, obviously, Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, you know, that Senate seat, whether he's running for it or not, will be one of the most competitive ones this coming cycle. And, you know, Democrats see that as a big opportunity to, you know, pad their margin a little bit in the Senate, you know, especially given that, obviously, Joe Biden won Wisconsin in November. I do think that with all these pieces, all these issues we're talking about, whether it's immigration or gun control or infrastructure, it is interesting that, you know, Senator Johnson does not necessarily behave the way other senators in kind of similar situations typically do. You know, when usually you might expect a senator up for reelection in a swing state that was, you know, carried by a president of the opposite party, that they might have an incentive to, you know, visibly, you know, make appearances with the president of that party or, you know, be a high profile supporter or at least, you know, negotiator on something like an infrastructure package or maybe even gun control to try and kind of burnish their bipartisan credentials. But in Wisconsin, that is not, you know, so far that is not kind of the path that Ron Johnson has taken, where he's obviously been a, you know, a prominent critic of Biden and members of his family and in general is not someone who's out there. Like someone like Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, who, you know, tried to reach compromises on gun control. He's not out there, you know, engaging in that kind of negotiation with the White House.
And we'll leave it there. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Andy Duren from The Wall Street Journal joining us for our week in Washington. Coming up, a look at rising numbers of women in legislatures around the country. This is Central Time.